My name's Luke Eskin, and this is the second episode of Rock and Roll Dad, a series based on the voice memos my father recorded before he died. Alan Eskin left Rhodesia at the age of 19, determined to make it as a rock and roll musician. He arrived in England in the winter of 1964. The only thing frostier than the weather was his reception at British Customs. An official stopped him to ask what was in the long case he was carrying, Memo 89.
I said, well, it's a bass guitar. He said, the duty and tax on this is going to be £64. Well, my total fortune at that time was £50 in my pocket. And I said, well, I can't afford that. I can't pay it. He said, OK, well, we're going to confiscate it. You'll have 3 months in which to reclaim it. Well, my heart was broken.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
I got on the train to London, and as we were going into London, it was actually snowing, so it sort of lifted my spirits a bit. I'd never seen snow like that in my life. And I was looking out at the red buses, etc., and we passed a big cinema, the Hammersmith Odeon, and this huge billboard just said, The Beatles' Christmas Show. I couldn't believe it. Here it was, one stop away from where I was staying, the Beatles were playing. Help me.
Dad's plan to make his own rock and roll mark in London involved his friend, guitarist Chris Stone. Back in Rhodesia, their group, the Phantoms, had won the national battle of the bands.
So I'd got out to Chris's place. Chris said, yes, well, I got into a band because I never thought you were coming. Well, that was a bit of a downer. And I said, Chris, you won't believe it. I said, the Beatles are playing at the Hammersmith Odeon. Let's go and see it. He said, huh, forget it. You'll never get a ticket. It's been a hard day's night. Going down Bond Street, there was a ticket agency. And I went in and I said, do you by any chance have any tickets for the Beatles? And the guy said, well, we do, but all we've got left are the most expensive tickets, 12 and 6, 12 shillings and sixpence. I couldn't believe it, how cheap they were. So I said, well, could I have two? Of course, hundreds of screaming girls, even outside the place. And our tickets turned out to be front row upstairs. As the curtains opened, the chords started. And it was She's a Woman. And I mean, McCartney's voice was just absolutely incredible. My love don't give me presents. I know that she's no peasant. I was in seventh heaven. It was just the greatest thing I'd ever heard. And they finished with Twist and Shout. And again, Lennon's voice, brilliant. Chris and I went and saw them the next night as well. And how lucky could I be to have been in England less than a week and see the Beatles twice? I'll never forget it.
Dad then had to come back down to earth and face a harsh reality. He was a stranger in the country, a musician without an instrument, living in a hotel in a freezing cold winter and rapidly running out of money. So he got the first job he could find, loading boxes in a factory that made windscreen wipers. This is how he describes the experience of going to the canteen on his first day. Memo 90.
That was one of those places where you walked along with the tray and they slopped stuff onto a plate. And after half an hour, the buzzer went again. Everyone up, tray down, followed him into the factory. I mean, it was really like zombies.
That same week, Dad went to the laundromat and stopped on the way home to buy cigarettes from a vending machine. By the time he turned around, the bag with all his clothes had been stolen. It actually turned out to be a stroke of good luck, because surprisingly, Dad had taken out travel insurance.
And 3 days later, I received a cheque, £90.
People try to put us to death. Talking about my generation.
Well, this was brilliant. Clothes in England actually were quite cheap at the time. Especially if you went down Carnaby Street, you could get some real groovy stuff. And I had the £60 I needed to get my guitar from customs.
Then Dad heard about a band at the Overseas Visitors Club that was auditioning for a bass player. To his amazement, they were a bunch of fellow Rhodesians. They were called the Shakespeares.
So that afternoon, I went along to the big hotel, and I guess I was about the fourth guy to get up. There were several things by the Stones, a couple of Beatles things, of course. I knew all these bass lines backwards. And Chris Kritzinger, who was the leader of the band, turned to me and he said, OK, do you want to join the band? And I was over the moon.
The Shakespeares were soon packing out the dance hall at the Overseas Visitors Club. Straight away, they asked Dad to move in with them in their free penthouse apartment on the top floor of the hotel.
We all shared this one room, and there was a short ladder going out through some French windows, and this was onto the roof. We'd go up and lie there, look at the stars, chat, smoking funny cigarettes. Need I say more? It was a great life.
Within weeks of Dad joining, the Shakespeares went into AdVision Studios in London to record a single called This Is The End.
This is the end. You're trying to say goodbye.
As they were finishing up, Dad spotted two of the most famous musicians in the world sitting in the control room.
It was actually Brian Jones and Keith Richard. And they'd come in because following on straight from us in this tiny studio were the Rolling Stones. They were actually very friendly.
This Is The End hit the charts, and within weeks, the band were playing at the NME Poll Winners' Party at the London Astoria, a who's who of the British music scene.
These guys who were my heroes, I wrote home and told folks back home, you won't believe it, just 2 weeks in, I've rubbed shoulders with all the top stars in England, and they never wrote back to me. And I didn't hear from anyone for 3 years.
It's harder to let you go.
Now, this is where things get a bit complicated. At the time Dad joined the Shakespeares, they were already signed to a record label in Belgium, owned by a fellow called Albert. They also had a manager in the UK, Bill Compton, who saw the band as his own get-rich-quick scheme. Instead of releasing This Is The End under the Shakespeares name and having to pay royalties back to the record company in Belgium, Compton released the single under a different name. This is how he explained it to the band.
He said, look, you guys are from Africa. Out there you've got bush babies. So this record came out with the ridiculous name of Teeny and Tony and the Bush Babies.
Albert was furious and insisted the single be withdrawn and the Shakespeares returned to Belgium. This Is The End was by no means a classic, but its short life and bizarre backstory has made it a highly sought-after prize for collectors. It took Dad nearly 50 years to track down the copy we're listening to. It may seem like a strange move, leaving swinging London for Belgium, but the Shakespeares soon found themselves playing to huge crowds who were hungry for rock and roll. One of their biggest shows was at the Sports Palace in Antwerp.
And it was amazing because it was like being in a football crowd. And the local radio station from Brussels came up to do a live recording. Well, the one we recorded was a theme tune from the Saint television show.
The Saint!
Which was very, very popular. Roger Moore was the Saint. We turned it into a sort of rock thing. the record was released, and it went straight to number one the following week. I still think it's one of the best recordings we ever had.
But although the band was selling plenty of records, they were starting to realise that their singer, Gene Latta, had an anger management problem. One night, the Shakespeares were at their favourite after-show sandwich bar, the Pigwig, when the owner happened to utter the word coiffeur in Gene's presence. Gene hardly spoke a word of French, but he knew that coiffeur meant something to do with hair, and he took it as a personal insult.
He'd got a screwdriver, and he leant across, and he pulled this guy over the counter and put the screwdriver right under his eye and was shouting at him, "What did you say?" We actually were a bit chicken, so we had Albert tell Gene, "Gene, look, we've had so many complaints, you're out of the band."
Shakespeare's guitarists Chris and Perry stepped up to take over vocal duties. By this stage, the band had also picked up a sax player, an Aussie named Ron Patton, who'd just come off a world tour with Roy Orbison. They were met in the dressing room one night by Frank Delfos, a booking agent from Australia, who offered them an amazing opportunity, a three-month contract at the Chevron Hilton in a place called Surfer's Paradise.
The money was absolutely incredible. And Frank said, "But there's one condition. You have to get your hair cut." Yeah, Surfer's Paradise, they've never seen long hair. And if they see guys looking like you, they're going to beat the hell out of you. We said, well, for what the money is, getting a haircut wasn't the end of the world.
So 2 days later, Dad was heading back to the Southern Hemisphere. But this time, he was flying first class. In the next episode of Rock and Roll Dad, we'll hear about the music scene in Australia in 1966, with fights, women, and the influence of two powerful new forces, the Vietnam War and LSD.
Change that scene.